Hello, everyone. Thanks for joining me. And this time we're going to focus on a topic that's not being talked about. How do we handle success for partners? Partner success is not a strategy that's common being talked about in our network in general. And I am very happy to say that I brought in a special guest from Cisco who has been developing a partner success program for the past, what would you say?
So probably about 10 years.
10 years.
10 okay. years on the program overall, three really accelerating with customer success.
For 10 years, they had very strong partner success program, but really infusing it in a scalable way is an initiative that they've been working on for the last 3 years. So I wanted to double click today on what is their partner success program works like, what works, what doesn't, how did they scale that program? Because you'll very soon see they had a really long list of awards for this program and a very impressive results. So without further ado, I just want to welcome Andrew Crothers from Cisco.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. It's an important topic that we can really dive into. So looking forward to the conversation.
Great. So if you guys are thinking about setting up a partner success program or have one, but you still have questions about how much more should you be doing with it to really get the results you want, stay tuned. We'll be right back. Andrew, thank you so much for your time today. The number one question that we typically get when we have companies that do work with partners, but they don't have a partner success program is, where should they start? What do you think about that? What would you recommend them to do?
A little bit of context. Cisco is a partner-driven business. I think the number varies a little bit, but it's usually somewhere between 85 and 90% of our overall revenue every year, which is 50 billion plus a year, runs through partners. So in many of those sales situations, we do have Cisco sellers combined with partner sellers working together on a deal. We have a whole set of customers that are partner driven. So when we moved to set up our customer success organization at Cisco, as we were making the transition from a hardware vendor to a software vendor and a subscription revenue based business model, the need to have a customer success function was obvious. So we started to develop that. And it begged the question of, what are we going to do with partners? Honestly, there are a lot of people within Cisco who are very focused in on customers, but not partners. So to try to pull that together was something that we had to spend a lot of time working with. So where to get started? I would say what we did that was successful when we got started was, first off, we sat down and talked with our partners. I know that sounds basic, but understanding their business model, it's very easy. And honestly, a lot of people and a lot of companies, Cisco included, can fall into this trap of thinking that every partner is going to be focused in on that one vendor, right? On Cisco, for example, specifically, especially with Cisco, given the size of Cisco. Whereas partners, there are some that sell almost exclusively Cisco. But most of our partners sell it for a variety of manufacturers, some of whom are competitors, some of whom are in, and they don't want to have a Cisco-only system that they're forced to use, and then they got to swivel in their chair over to the Microsoft-only system. So they're not looking for that. The other thing that is a real concern for a lot of partners, almost like a third rail, is sharing of data. So by sitting down with partners first to co-design how we were going to tackle the issue. We started off for several years, we've been working with our general partner organization, with our general partner community, I should say, to explain CS, the need for CS, et cetera. And like any type of organization, there are some early adopters, there are some laggards. I don't think there are many laggards anymore. And then the middle, right? So once we got partners to understand the value, honestly, the necessity to their business of developing a customer success function. And we help them build that with playbooks and guides and hiring manuals and job descriptions and certifications, you know, et cetera. Then the obvious question is, well, how do we do it together? So there was an interest that either we helped develop or partners came to already with, how are we going to do this together? So sitting down at the table and co-designing a solution rather than designing it in our ivory tower and then rolling it out to them, which is how a lot of partner programs are developed and rolled out. I know this sounds like the ABCs, but it's oftentimes the most obvious stuff that gets forgotten in the rush to get to a solution. So when we were co-designing, that gave us the opportunity to start to build trust with partners around things like data sharing. What data were we going to share with them? What data were they going to share with us? And that was just as important to us as our sharing data with them was. For a brief example, we started working with partners on renewals. And the need was obvious to everybody. We were leaving so many renewals on the table. And we knew year after year after year when we talked to customers, the number one reason that customers were not renewing a service contract was they didn't know they had a renewal. So it wasn't cost. It wasn't, I'm not using it. It was really, I had a renewal. I didn't even know. And it expired. I had no idea. I'm not covered. What? So we then said, all right, well, let's go out and notify customers. And honestly, at the beginning of the conversation we had with partners, they said, well, you can't do that. There are customers. We said, nope, there are customers, right? These are Cisco service contracts that you're reselling. So after a little back and forth and us realizing we don't have the customer contact information to reach our customers.
Oh.
Right? We go through partners. They're the ones that are closer in almost every case to our customers than we are. So even if we wanted to put our foot down and say, look, we're reaching these customers, we found we only had contact information for 30% of the customers that we wanted to reach about upcoming renewal contract dates. So we needed the data from partners. Partners said, I'm not going to give you that. Like, that's the crown jewel of my business. Tell you who these customers are and how to contact them. What if you turn around and get into your own sellers? Mm-hmm. So not every partner rushed to join, but a few did. And we were able to start building a program where we, in a co-branded way, go out to customers to notify them. At the beginning, it was spreadsheets. It was sneaker net. It was, you know, duct tape and bail and a very manual process. And this goes back about 10 years. We then took that. And over time, added more partners as more partners started to see the success that those participating in what was really a fairly basic co-branded email notification program. And over time, we were able to build out more functionality, bring in more of the solutions that we were notifying customers about into it. To now, fast forward, we have 7,000 partners in the program. We have 95% of the monthly available to renew goes through our program through those 7,000 partners. And the renewal rates for those partners in the program is 26 points higher. So other partners started to see the results and I'm in. So at this point, they're all in. We then added automation into the program so that we can scale more. We had to work internally with other business units within Cisco to pull data in. We built out then our customer success end to it as well. And that was a significant heavy lift over the last couple of years as well, which we can get to. But the first thing to do is to sit down with a core set of partners and design what the solution is going to be, what the approach is going to be, then design how you can execute on that. If you try to just figure it out on your own and then roll it out, you're, even if what you roll out might technically be effective, you won't have built up the trust that is a requisite for this to work out well.
Yeah. So let me summarize that. Basically, step number one, you started by having conversations. Were you taking your key partners or did you reel in some of the smaller partners in that discovery phase?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a bit of both. We absolutely brought in our key partners, but we wanted to make sure that what we were developing worked for as many partners as possible. So yes, we had different sessions. We had individual interviews that we did. We set up a steering committee ultimately with partners from a variety of types of businesses. We set one up in Europe, one in Asia, one in the Americas, then sort of compared notes globally.
And when you say we, was there a specialized team to develop the partner success? And if so, was that team reporting into customer success or was it reporting into a different area of the organization, mm-hmm. say partnerships and business development? Like,
right. So we did have a special team focused in on it. We developed the program in the Americas first. We had a team working on that in the customer success organization. So my organization is the digital experience organization within Cisco. And we started out in the customer success organization for several years. We're some of the founding members of customer success within Cisco. So we were like tied at the hip from the very beginning. We were part of the original 100 people. We were 50 of them. So we then built that out in the Americas. We worked very closely with the partner organization that we have within Cisco. And within Cisco, we've got an Americas partner organization and a global partner organization. So we worked closely with the Americas, then partner. I helped them globalize this program. Once we sort of got it going for a few years and felt like it was stable and effective and showing results, I helped then globalize the program in Europe and Asia, where we set up teams locally in each of those two regions. Mm-hmm. And then I, you know, sort of coordinated understanding the different needs, because there's slightly different partner business models in each of those regions, different from the Americas. So figuring out those models, how are we going to adapt what we were trying to do overall globally so that it would work in all three of the regions. And then once we figured that out and built up local teams in each of those regions as well, then we really started to accelerate what we were doing.
So you start having conversations with various partners, big, small, and you came up with some sort of a design. So I want to talk about that design, because you mentioned that some of the partners actually had some concerns around, are you going to come up with a new software? And then we have different vendors that we work with. How did you tackle that?
Yep. I'll tell you where we are and I'll tell you where we're going. We are 90% of the way there, but we haven't solved all of that. So
okay,
working with partners, what they said they wanted was, one, we wanted a data sharing agreement. We wanted customer contact information. They wanted all of the renewal and the contract information. And then when it came to customer success, they wanted the telemetry information. They wanted the same information that we share with our Cisco customer success reps: telemetry, stuck in stage notifications, recommended actions for customers that are stuck in stage, whether that be enablement material, webinar, whatever it might be. They wanted that same type of information, and they wanted visibility to what our customer success reps were doing with customers. And we wanted that as well, visibility into what their customer success managers were doing with those same customers. So to do that, we did create a platform that allowed us to share data. So it's a portal where partners can share the contact information. We share contract information, telemetry, recommended actions, all of that in that portal. We've connected that portal that our partners use with our Salesforce consoles that our CSMs use, so that we're sharing data back and forth, so that if a CSM at Cisco does something, it shows in the record in the portal that we have. So we did build another portal. And we also, and this is a critical element, another thing that partners wanted was a level of control with what was being communicated to their customers. Meaning, so we gave them control. When they opt into this program that we have, and they upload their logo so we can co-brand notifications, they upload a value proposition so that those notifications aren't just, you know, logo co-branded, but there's information about the brand. They also have the opportunity to opt certain customers out globally, never contact this customer. It's a high-touch customer of mine. I'm always talking to this customer. I don't want digital notifications going to this customer ever. And they have the opportunity to set dollar thresholds based on their dollar value of their relationship with those customers. They can set bands, only send to below a certain dollar threshold. So they have the opportunity, based on sort of the net worth of that customer to them, to opt customers in or out. And then every month, they have the opportunity to suppress customers or opt out customers from that monthly send that goes out. I'm in a sales conversation with that customer this month or for the next 2 months, so don't send out a $2,000 renewal notice or a customer success notification. So they have now a measure of control. And that we came from the initial conversations we had with them and trying to solve for the problem, as opposed to simply mandate what the solution was going to be. So that was step one. Now, we have some partners, especially a lot of our smaller partners, who use it as their customer success platform. They don't have a Gainsight or Tatango, or they haven't built their own, as some of our larger partners have done. So for them, this is their customer success platform and they're thrilled. What we're working with now is building APIs for the partners that have built their own platform, their own homegrown system, or have a third-party system. And they're like, great, I love all this data, just flow it into what I'm already using. So we're in the process of building those out. That's the last 10% of what we're looking to nail down here.
So obviously you share a lot of information and customer data with your partners. Two follow-up questions. Were you nervous about that? You mentioned before that your partners are actually working with your competitors, showing them that potentially usage dropped significantly, or potentially a survey came up that they're highly unsatisfied with the service they're receiving from Cisco, whether it's technical support or whatnot. Was that ever a concern in terms of what to share with your partners? And have you seen any impact in sharing all this data with certain partners?
Yes, it was a concern initially, but I mean, really, there were two options: do nothing and continue to lose hundreds of millions of dollars a year, or do something. And doing something meant doing it collaboratively with our partners. So yes, it was a concern. We started small. We weren't sharing really sensitive data initially, and we were sharing data that our partners could get elsewhere. We do already share with partners. We did already share with partners renewal information, you know, et cetera. This was now, how do we then take that directly to customers together? So we weren't, we weren't opening up the IP vault, number one. And honestly, the stakes were too high. We knew we were giving up too much money and that this was an opportunity to solve it. So that's how we got over the initial hesitancy of like, how are we going to share this much information? And I think that was the same calculation that our partners had. We're just simply giving up too much money here. This seems like a good faith effort from Cisco. We're going to dip our toe in the water, see what it's like. Some partners said, we're going to see what those partners do and see how it works. And slowly we built up trust. It was not an overnight, everybody's in and this is great. It took time to build up trust.
What kind of data did you ask your partners to contribute? And do you mandate certain points of data? You mentioned that you didn't even know who the customer contact was. Is that now something that you mandate them to share to some degree?
Yes, we do. And I mentioned that we only had initially 30% contactability. We had about 85% contactability now.
Wow.
And when I say contactability, I mean not only the contact information, but the correct contact information. So the person whose name and email address or other contact information that we might have, even when we did have it, that might not be the right person. That might be the purchasing agent, not the user. Partners know. So partners give us up to 6 contacts per company. So if we've got a contact who's the user for WebEx, that may be different than the security user. That might be different than the, because we sell networking.
Right.
We sell so many different products. So making sure that we've got multiple, that's the number one thing that partners give us. Along with the number two thing is, what actions have they taken to reach out to those customers? It's a digital program. So the point is to scale with partners and do that digitally across millions of customers, 7,000 partners, millions of customers globally, around hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars worth of contracts. So it has to have a digital element to that. And at the same time, all these customers, most of these customers do have a human connection point to us as well. So it's important to us that we not only have the contact information for digital engagements with customers, but we also have an understanding of what our partners are doing. They can provide those updates in the portal that I mentioned.
You mentioned that some of your partners actually have customer success managers assigned to their key accounts. You have customer success managers that might be assigned to the same accounts for things that customer potentially purchased from you directly. You also mentioned that there's another team that potentially manages the partner as an account. Tell me a little bit about how this Trilogy works.
Yeah, great question. So this program, Lifecycle Advantage is what we call it. That's the name of the platform and the program around it. It started off as a small project working with a few partners. It has now grown through the years into a fully automated program. We've connected the systems between the Lifecycle Advantage portal, and as I mentioned, what the Salesforce consoles that our Cisco reps are using. So now we have data flowing between Cisco and each of our partners about their Cisco customers that have made their Cisco purchases. That in and of itself is extremely complex, because very common for Cisco customers to have multiple partners depending on what they've purchased. So we need to make sure that we've got the integrity of data so that partner X is only seeing their customers and not partner Y's customers. And similarly, we don't want a customer from Walgreens to be seeing Boeing's data. So we need to make sure that we spent a lot of time and effort making sure that the data is accurate and correct. And as we've built that out and as we've worked with the partner organization within Cisco, so this is the organization that manages our partner relationships. Larger partners within Cisco have a partner account manager, just as they have an account manager. They manage the partner's relationship with Cisco. So certifications, accreditations, rebate programs, you know, all these types of programs that we have with a company as large as Cisco, can oftentimes it's nice for the partners to have a Sherpa that guides them through all this. So we made sure that those folks were involved in the initial conversations as well. Mm-hmm. We reached a point where that team was then starting to create visibility for Cisco partners in general about Lifecycle Advantage. Now we've reached the point where Lifecycle Advantage is the go-to-market with partner model within Cisco globally. So it took time, and there are a lot of players we needed to work with within Cisco as well, including the partner teams, but it's a lot of conversations.
So you have a partner success manager that actually manages the health of the partner itself. Mm-hmm. And then you might have a CSM or multiple CSMs assigned to a large account. And they would have to work with multiple CSMs with different partners if they have any indirect purchases. So having all of that in one, all this information, as I should say, in one system probably helps a lot in just getting a handle on everything.
You're absolutely right. And that's why when people ask me, where do I get started, whether they've got a partner model or not, it's A, just do it and start off with the data. Start off with figuring out what data do you have in your company. It took us 3 years, my digital experience organization, 3 years to figure out and get access to all of the data sources within Cisco. They're the obvious ones, purchasing and contract information, yes. But there are so many other data sources, some of which are redundant, some of them not, that there wasn't a comprehensive inventory of data sources within Cisco. We're a large organization. Their silos do exist. So that's the first thing. Once we got that and we're able to pull it all in, we have a very sophisticated platform team within our organization, as our digital experience organization as well, that manages some data platforms and is connected to multiple other ones across Cisco, right? So we're not trying to own all the data within Cisco. We're trying to leverage it all. And being able to pull it into one system that allows us to communicate with customers directly or through and with partners was a significant advance in our efforts. It just starts with getting started and collecting the data.
Absolutely. You mentioned before, you started with the Americas. You started a very rudimentary way, tested things out, essentially doing almost like a proof of concept, then rolling it out to additional partners. There's two things that seems to happen then. One, you started adding more partners, and with that, you've built what I believe is probably like a partner success program outside of the U.S. Tell me a little bit about that program. As you started launching it internationally, what kind of resources were you looking to hire? Were those partner success managers or actually folks that would take that digital transformation and work locally with those partners to sign them up to all of that situation or even localize to some degree?
So all of the above, meaning Cisco, the same model that we've been talking about that Cisco had in the Americas with partner success managers and account managers and partner account managers, that exists in each of the three different regions of the world that Cisco breaks up its business into. What we did when we developed this program, and as you said, as a proof of concept and reached a level where it was working and it was effective, and then we wanted to globalize that, then we started to build local teams in each of those regions to focus in on their partners as we had done in the US. So when I say teams, I mean, we started off with one person and then grew to three. And now there are probably 5 to 7 in Europe and another 5 or so across Asia as well, sprinkled throughout each of those regions. They're not all centrally located in one country, in one office. And their job is to A, recruit partners into the program. So a lot of introductory meetings and follow-up conversations. I went over to Europe and Asia to meet with partners when we were starting the globalization effort to explain what we were doing, explain the impact that we were having, get them on board. And then our local teams also then work with partners that are in the program on adoption. So we don't take adoption for granted either. We have, again, for our larger, similar with our customers, we have more of a high-touch model for our larger partners and more of a low-touch model for some of our smaller partners that we need to reach but can't hire enough people to reach directly. So we built out an adoption journey for the Lifecycle Advantage program specifically that goes to partners that are in the program. So we figured out what are each of the adoption steps for taking advantage of the program? What are the exit criteria to move from each step to the following step? We built out a digital journey, and then we use that to reach partners at scale. Same thing with that we do with our customers when it comes to adopting our products and our software and our solutions. Our high-touch partners then have these high-touch managers who work closely with them to make sure that they are moving through the program and getting value out of it. So it's sort of a multitude of ways. And again, in each region, we're working with that region's Cisco partner organization as well.
For those teams that you've built across the world, may I ask, those are your partner success teams or is that part of the digital experience team?
The ones I was discussing are part of our digital experience team. Yeah, working to drive adoption of the Lifecycle Advantage program.
Okay, so they were digital experience, but de facto, they're partner success. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely.
If somebody asked you what should be the key performance indicators, what we like to call KPIs, for a partner success team, what would you say?
At a basic level, it's, I would say, number of partners engaged. Let's start with reach. Next is going to be some measurement of partner satisfaction, depending on how companies do measure their own partner satisfaction. Oftentimes, it's with surveys, sort of a less formalized version of a CSAT score, and then business impact. All right, so reach, satisfaction, and business impact. So for us, it's business impact. There are two sides to the business impact coin. There's, I'll call it the Cisco side, which is things like lifecycle progression speed through the lifecycle stages for their customers. We find, for example, that there's a 250% faster lifecycle progression through the adoption stages for customers whose partners are communicating with them engaged through this program than not. So that's a key metric for us. The other one is renewal rate and percentage of the available to renew. So that we're looking at that. And then the other business metric is growth. So how are we growing our business through upsell, cross-sell with customers in this program as well? From the partner side, those are the same business impact metrics along with Cisco incentives that partners receive for renewal rates and attach rates and customer success metrics, et cetera. So they sort of have an extra dollop of business impact.
What do you mean by available for renewal? And you said percentage available for renewal. Never heard that before.
Yeah, the available to renew, or ATR sometimes it's abbreviated to, is the dollars that are available to renew in any given month or quarter, pick your time period. So there may be some, and that's different than just what the renewal contract expiration date might be, because there might be various other considerations that make something not available to renew. Maybe, for example, it's a multi-year contract. Maybe it is, there are some products or solutions, especially for a company with as many SKUs as Cisco has, that don't have a renewal on it. So there's a slight difference, but it's important that we're measuring what's actually available to renew as opposed to what on paper might look like what is available to renew and it's not really what's actually available.
All right, that's cool. Last question for you. At the beginning of the conversation, that one of the earlier steps that you put investments in is creating enablement programs for partners to teach them how to set up a customer success function within their own organization. How much investment have you actually made and how many partners opted into it? What would you recommend other companies in terms of investments to be made in customer success education for their partners?
At a Cisco level, this started 10 or 12 years ago. There have been, I would venture to guess, tens of millions of dollars invested in it. A lot of that, going, if you go back 10 or 12 years ago, customer success as a function was still nascent. There were still many people within the partner community and frankly, within the Cisco community, within the overall IT or industry, that thought this was sort of the latest management fad. So a lot of those resources went into communicating through a variety of media, through a variety of channels, at conferences, the importance of customer success. Why customer success? I don't think that people who are starting that effort now need to have that same level of repeated conversations, right? I think that there's a lot more understanding that customer success is a required function.
Yeah.
That, I mean, the statistics show 87% of customers have left a vendor for a competitor vendor because they didn't like the experience they were getting. It's not only a way to retain customers, it's the number three buying criteria behind functionality and quality above price. So customer success, I think, is now recognized as a must-have for organizations. So I don't think organizations are going to need to invest that level of resources that we did and other, you know, Microsoft, others did as well to help build the understanding. But it's still something that needs to get done. And I think it's a lot more into, so we've built certification programs. We've created training materials around not just why customer success, but how to approach customer success strategically, how to build a team, what roles for partners should look at hiring internally, what are the job descriptions for that roles? I mean, we laid out the entire blueprint for partners because as a partner-driven business, this was critical to us. I think there's a lot of that information that's available through a variety of organizations and through companies and experts like yourself that can help companies get to that level very quickly. And then it's a matter of working with your existing partner-facing people to help drive those conversations along.
100%. Have you seen an uptake in the performance of partners that actually established a customer success program within their own organization versus the ones that said, not really, let me just work with, maybe just opted to the software and getting some more data about customers?
Absolutely. It's night and day. Partners that haven't built their own customer success organization, that is concomitant with the size of that partner, right? If it's a small mom and pop shop, then their account managers, right, their 5 or 10 account managers are probably their CSMs as well. And that, you know, that may be appropriate. That said, they still need to reach all of their customers. So digital is going to be a huge part of that. So working with a vendor like Cisco that has a digital reach capability is going to be critical for them. I think partners that are leaning heavily on their vendors for that digital reach capability will get closer and closer to those vendors that supply that and farther away from those that don't. So it really works two ways. For partners that are larger partners, not necessarily large, but have some capability, they've built out a customer success organization and they are thriving. They are seeing higher retention rates. They're seeing higher growth rates from their customers as well. They are seeing similar or growing sales rates versus partners that haven't created their own CSM function, which are seeing lowering sales rates, lowering retention rate. The die's already cast. And we're seeing that in our business results as well. We're seeing that also anecdotally in conversations we're having with partners. We're seeing it anecdotally. I mean, I look at it from my perspective. We've got Cisco's annual or semi-annual partner summit coming up in November, beginning of November. Tens of thousands of people will descend on Las Vegas. And 10 years ago, there might be a side breakout session on customer success for partners. Now there are multiple main stage presentations around it. That's not only because Cisco has decided this is important. It's because in conversations with partners, partners have said, we are thirsty for this information. Let's put this front and center because we need it.
Maybe we can conclude with this question. If any company approached you and said, we have some partners, but we don't have any partner success program, how would you rank that in terms of importance for them to start digging into establishing a partner success program?
Well, I would ask them a question first. Ask them how important it is that they're still in business 5 years from now. If they don't have a customer success program, they most likely will be out of business in the next 5 or 10 years.
Wow.
Their own customers will vote, and they are voting with their feet. If they're not getting the experience that they want from their partner, along with the vendor, they'll go somewhere else. That's the difference in a SaaS world. Customers are no longer locked in. They have the opportunity to move and move relatively easily to a different partner who's going to service them better. So I would say it is paramount for partners to build a well-functioning at scale. When I say scale, I mean a scale of reach to their customers, digital plus human fallback customer success program. If they don't do that, they're going to suffer and eventually go out of business.
And if there's a reseller that works with a software vendor or hardware vendor, that vendor does not have a partner success program, should they still establish a customer success function, reach out to their software partner and say, hey, how should we collaborate together? I think that's kind of like what I'm hearing. You would probably recommend a value-added partner to do proactively, regardless of what their software partner does, if they're a reseller.
Right. I mean, their business is their business that they need to take care of and nurture. So if their vendor's not going to provide this for them, I think either depending on the value of that vendor to them, they either reach out to that vendor and start trying to collaboratively solve this problem or find another vendor.
Well, this was a fabulous conversation.